Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are waiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information about the University of Maryland's transplant program and becoming an organ donor is available at umm.edu/transplant. We have been covering with some intensity over the last couple of months, different times, the bill that was before the House of Delegates, which was House Bill 0829, a bill that would have prohibited physical restraint from being used on an inmate when the inmate is in the second or third trimester of her pregnancy and or when the inmate is in labor. That bill was defeated. And I must say that I was one of those, after covering it, was kind of shocked about its defeat, and we'll talk about that and why that happened. We did ask all the people who offered the amendments to defeat the bill to come on, but none of them would. But we have with us here in the studio Jacqueline Robarge, who is a director and founder of Power Inside, a 12-year-old harm reduction program in Baltimore that serves women impacted by incarceration, street life, and abuse, and has worked with women like this for over 20 years. And Jackie, good to have you back in the studio with us.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined in studio by Sue Esty, who is Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for Ask Me, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Council number 3. Always good to see you, Sue. It's been a while.
It's been a while. It's good to see you, Mark.
And by phone, Rick Benetti is joining us. He's Director of Communications for the Maryland Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. Rick, good to talk to you again.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
And Delegate Mary Washington, Maryland State Delegate for the 43rd District in Baltimore, who is sponsor of House Bill 0829 that we just described. And Delegate Washington, good to have you back with us as well.
I'm here. Great.
And all of you can join us here at 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So we're doing this follow-up because, as I said earlier, to be very honest, and I try to be that way as much as humanly possible, that I was kind of shocked that the bill didn't pass. It seemed like a kind of no-brainer to most people who heard about it. So, when we did try to talk to the Correctional Officers Association, but they didn't get a response, but we did get a response from the AFSCME, which they're part of. Let me just start there. I mean, what was the opposition that made this bill fail? Why did it fail? What was the issue with the bill?
Go ahead, Mary.
You can start, Mary. Go ahead, Mary.
I think that one of the things that we need to understand is that, and I appreciate you for covering this, is that we don't do a lot of thinking about our correctional inmates in this type of way. So I think first there were a lot of people that didn't understand what we were trying to do. So I think that some of the reasons why amendments were made that had the result of actually gutting the bill, but I think there's genuinely a misunderstanding, at least among some of the supporters, about what we were attempting. But I would like to hear it from the opposition specifically.
Well, yeah, I was going to assume. I mean, so there was a lot of move by the correction officers to oppose this bill. I mean, even though it wasn't public, a lot of delegates have said to me, "Oh, we've been lobbied pretty heavy not to vote against it." So why?
Well, actually, our union testified in the first hearing when the bill was introduced, and we had some concerns about the bill, but we did not heavily lobby the bill. We did testify at the hearing, and our concerns were several. One was the bill as introduced put a lot of weight on the decision of the specific correctional officer to make the decision about whether restraints were needed or not, and we felt it was very important that that be actually a decision either by the medical staff or the facility, which is how it is done right now. If there's a decision that an inmate needs to be restrained, the hospital is mostly the one that makes that decision, especially once you're in the medical facility. There also is a policy that the department has that exists already that talks about using the least possible restraint when transporting an inmate, pregnant or otherwise. We didn't actually oppose the bill. We supported the bill and testified in favor of it in the Senate. At that point, the House had made some amendments that clarified that it was a joint decision between supervision and a health care facility and the correctional officer as to what types of restraints, if any, were necessary at a given point in time. We did not – I mean, just to be clear, there's a lot of difference between when somebody's in labor, for example. I don't think there's anybody who supports anymore. Maybe at one time they did, but I don't think there's anybody that supports restraining an inmate during labor. The bigger questions for us and the concerns that we had is if an inmate is, say an inmate is 6 months pregnant and is in a hospital setting, is unrestrained, and attempts to escape, is going down a hospital corridor or something like that, what does one do? Obviously, you don't want to tackle, a pregnant woman. And so some of the concerns we had were that handcuffs, for example, may be necessary to prevent a situation that could lead to greater danger. And that's the kind of testimony that we gave during the House hearing on it.
Jackie and Mary, before I turn to Rick Bonetti, let me ask you both to come in the conversation. Now, I'm a bit confused.
Okay.
And I'm confused because when we've had our discussions on the air, I thought the bill was exactly saying that you wanted to leave it up to medical professionals and not to the arbitrary decision of people who run not our state prison so much, but we'll talk to Rick about that in a moment, but our county facilities and city facilities.
Exactly. I'm confused as well. The women that have talked to us and shared their concerns and the trauma of experiencing shackling while they've been transported or during labor or delivery have shared that the decision to shackle was made by individual correctional officers, and sometimes removing them or putting them on was very subjective. The gender of the correctional officer, the ability of the detainee or inmate to advocate for their needs or to express that they're in pain, or the decision or the strength of advocacy by the medical professional. Most of the time when the shackles were removed, it was because of the medical professional, not a correctional officer, making that decision to try and remove the shackles.
And so, Mary, I mean, it sounds like what Sue was saying was the bill you put in. So that's why I'm saying I was completely confused as well.
Well, the bill was amended both in the House and in the Senate. And I think we were very clear in our testimony that part of our concern was that if a correctional officer – and our correctional officers that I've talked to are acting strictly under the orders either of the hospital or of their superiors. There is individuals. Now, the individuals may be who the inmates have interacted with and who they see, but the individual correctional officer does not make the call. And we're more comfortable with that. We did not want the individual correctional
officer. Right, not in a sense.
Because whatever decision they make.
Let me just say, the bill was changed originally, and I want to say that we did work closely with AFSCME, and they did, when it came to the Senate version, testify that they support it. But it was very clear in the legislation that it would be a managing official that would make the decision, that there would be an opportunity based on a woman's history of being either a danger to herself or others or a flight risk. We just felt that the default position should be that when women are in their second and third trimester, when they are under the medical care and they are in this very precarious medical condition, that every attempt should be made to not restrict their motion. And so, but we allowed in the original bill an exemption that if the woman was found to actually be a threat to herself, that the correctional, that the managing official could fill out a form prior to transport that detailed why this person needed to be restrained, and also would require that if the person was restrained, that we note the type of restraint, the length of the restraint, and also have a medical personnel in charge of their care, make the decision about what would actually be considered least restrictive. In this context, least restrictive is not done in collaboration or in consultation with a medical personnel. And I don't think that, and I agree with AFSCME that I don't think correctional officers should be in the position making decisions about the best medical outcome of an inmate.
Right. I'm only interrupting because I just realized Rick Bonetti is only can stay another 5 minutes. I didn't realize that at the top. So, Rick, I'm sorry. So what's the official take of corrections on this then?
Well, Mark, DPSES's policy is actually one of the most progressive policies in the country, and I'll run it down for you very quickly. Pregnant inmate or detainee cannot be restrained. It was actually only restrained when absolutely necessary to protect the pregnant individual from self-harm, harming others, or to prevent escape. And in terms of restraint for the pregnant inmate, what basically the most that would ever happen with one of our inmates, I can't speak for the locals, but for a state
right.
inmate, would be that her hand or arm would be handcuffed to a wheelchair. And that would be done, and deciding to do that generally is made on a case-by-case basis, based on the things I've already described in transport. And I'll back what Sue says here, and depending on which hospital, what the hospital's policy is. So like I said, the determination on restraints, that is putting a handcuff on an inmate and handcuffing her arm to a wheelchair, that would be made on a case-by-case basis depending upon the policy of the particular hospital that that she's in or during transport. Most hospitals generally like some sort of restraint used when a patient is in an unsecured part of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bottom line for DPSCS, or the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services, is we have to follow whatever the policy of the hospital is. But this has been a pretty important issue personally to Secretary Maynard for years. He actually sits on the National Task Force on the Use of Restraints with Pregnant Women Under Correctional Custody. This is a task force that has evolved over the last few years, which has evolved out of meetings between federal agencies, national associations, state and local policymakers, practitioners, and nonprofits, and advocates for inmates. So he's been part of the discussion. DPSCS has been part of the discussion for this for the past probably going back to 2007, 2008. Which is sort of when the current policy evolved within the department.
So I'm curious, and Rick, I know you only got like a minute and a half or two minutes.
I mean, we don't have to rush. I've got a couple of minutes.
Okay, good. So Mary and Jackie, coming back to the two of you, so there's a disconnect. So if Ask Me said that they supported the bill for the most part when it first came through, and Rick Benetti, as the people in Montgomery County have said to us, had very kind of as they define them, progressive policies towards pregnant women who are inmates, then what happened? I mean, where was the opposition? Was it the county jails that got together and said, we don't want to be told what to do? So is that when a delegate says to me that we were lobbied heavy, and we're hearing from Sue, no, it wasn't being lobbied heavy from Ask Me, then somebody's obviously lobbying heavy to stop this thing. So where did that come from, and why did it change so drastically?
I was just looking at the bill and the way it was amended, and it looks like I don't know, honestly, but it does look like the legislators themselves in the Senate had concerns in the amendments they made, and so did the judiciary. And as so often happens, the House and this came out of the Senate in the last couple of days
right.
of the session.
But it gutted the bill. So I'm just curious for a moment from Mary and Jackie, mm-hmm. what happened?
I can't speak to the ins and outs of what happened in Annapolis, but I do know when it came out of the House Judiciary Committee, we already had concerns that there were some communications happening outside of the hearing room, that it took the provisions regarding detention centers out. That's nearly 18, 20 facilities, leaving it down to two state facilities that already had a policy in play. It took out all the monitoring provisions, and it also took out second trimester provisions. Then it went over to the Senate, and the Senate gave it the death blow. There were clearly some things happening that, we're a nonprofit program that serves vulnerable women. And
right.
so we would like to know who thinks this is a good idea, who advocated for this to continue, because the practices that we're talking about are continuing, and what we have done to this day, we're allowing it to continue. We're not saying, oh, we don't oppose a bill. What those who have lobbied and opposed this bill have done is allow what has currently happened to continue to happen. And it's been happening for decades, and it needs to stop.
And, Mark, if you listen to the testimony that the Department of Corrections, the State Department of Corrections gave, while they took no position, they were very clear they did not feel that the law was needed. And, again, upon our investigations and talking with the women as well, that despite the fact that there were directives against certain practices, these practices are still going on. Additionally, if we're such a leader, 18 other states, including places like Texas and Arizona, have banned the practice of shackling pregnant women, particularly with regard to leg restraints, waist restraints, and in some cases, something called a black box that goes around the waist. It shackles the hands, it shackles the wrists. Again, I would say if we're a leader, why would we have a problem with codifying, with actually putting into Maryland law so that the correctional officers have clear direction, so we can't say, oh, you know, they don't have a problem of their supervisor telling them something different because it's only a policy, that it would also affect the locals as well as the state, and there would be standardization across the state of Maryland. And also, we would make a statement that we, as a state, do not believe that we should shackle pregnant women during transport or labor. And again, I think we do pass bills talking about that, make statements about the type of state that we are. And I think that this is one of those examples. So, you know, we're hoping, and we know that we'll go back again, because like Jackie said, we didn't particularly love the way that it came out of the House, but it was something. And also, I want to make sure that we protect the correctional officers, because often they have their own challenges with how their work conditions. And so I think that this is a bill, by bringing in medical personnel, by bringing correctional supervisors into the decision-making, and really, I think, looking to restore the humanity of these women is something that we should do as Marylanders. And so you're right. The question is, who would oppose such a thing?
Well, Mark, if I could clarify a couple of things.
Rick Benetti, go ahead.
In terms of our policy, devices, as described by the delegate, you know, waist chains, other similar devices that are worn around waists cannot be used,
used on
state inmates.
They are used.
They're not used on state inmates. And I will tell you this, just in terms of the testimony that I wasn't there during the testimony. I think this was the Senate or maybe it was the House version, but there were two former inmates that gave testimony. And the descriptions they gave during their testimony on this bill predated the department's research and revision of its current policy. One of those inmates was released in 2004 and the other was in 2008. And so that would have predated the department's current policy for sure. I believe the restraint policy was put in place in the previous administration, I think in 2006, maybe 2005, and then was, like I said, based on Secretary Maynard's interest in the issue, researched and revised. So it's a little unfair to sort of cast a big wide net in terms of the treatment of pregnant inmates to include state inmates, and I would certainly say if the delegate knows of any current inmates or used current inmates who've been subject to those types of restraints, that she should probably give us a call and we'll look into that. But I can tell you now
I would ask the question, if this is our policy, what would be the concern about having as a matter of law? There are lots of things that we make as a matter of law that make sure that regardless of who is in charge. Now, again, Maynard may be a leader, but, you know, if you're talking about a leader among people, you know, who allow the shackling of pregnant women, I think we would rather be a leader among the states who have banned the practice. Federal correctional officers, you're not allowed to do it in federal facilities. So So why, again, Maryland is the leader in our health care exchange. Maryland is the leader now in our gun control. Maryland is a leader in terms of marriage equality. Maryland is a leader in so many things. Why can we not be the leader when it comes to the fair and equal treatment of our inmates who are citizens and protected under the U.S. Constitution like everyone else?
Well, despite the politics on the bill and why it did or didn't get passed, Maryland is a leader in terms of on this issue, based mostly in the Secretary's voice on this national task force, which is sponsored by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, and the Bureau of Justice Assistance National Resource Center on Justice-Involved Women. The department has been part of this discussion nationally for probably 4 or 5 years now, and its policy reflects that. So to say that at least the department anyway isn't a leader on this issue.
And what I'm saying is that the department should allow this to become a matter of law so that their policies will affect local and will go well past and could be a legacy of this administration.
So the question I have, though, that in the few minutes we have left, is just to be clear about this. Rick Benetti, so did or didn't the Department of Corrections oppose the bill? Did they?
The department took no position on it. And it did testify. The secretary testified about the department's policy, basically providing the committee information on what DPSES does now, as opposed to what some of the locals might do. But again, you know, the department has been a national leader and is a national leader. In terms of making whatever policy law, I mean, there's a lot of interests there, and including the local detention centers, the department, the department doesn't always speak for those locals, as you know.
But the department also didn't come up and say we think the bill should pass because we think we would encourage local detention facilities to follow the same procedures we do in the state.
Well, I mean, it's up to the local detention centers. The state of Maryland is fortunately or unfortunately the only state in the country that runs a local booking center and jail, and that's Baltimore City Jail. I don't think we'd like to be in the business of dictating how local detention centers approach their own issues.
We have like 2 minutes left. Mary, what were you saying? We literally have 2 minutes left in the segment. Mary, you were saying what?
For the record, Baltimore City wrote in support of the bill in its original form.
So we still haven't got to the bottom of why the bill failed. We have no idea why the bill failed. Why was this just kind of the emanations of very conservative, mostly not slashing conservatism or Republicans, but was this the emanations of very conservative Republican lawmakers who threw out amendments to kind of water the bill down, or there's something else behind it that we're not talking about?
There was a someone who testified, and I forgot who it was at the Senate or the House hearing. And one of the things that she said is justification for why this bill was not needed. She said, well, they are prisoners, you know. And that was her whole rationale, why to do something that has been that is proven medically harmful, very painful, very humiliating. And I believe that what underpins all of this is really our belief that, yes, indeed, they are prisoners, and we can do whatever we like to them because they have broken our social code and our criminal code to the degree that they deserve this level of degradation. And we remain very concerned about the local detention centers. These are women very far from urban centers where there are watchdog groups to protect them. And they are out there. There are pregnant women. The detention centers are not providing information about who they are. There are no programs like ours. And to the credit of the Department of Public Safety, they have some wonderful programming. Our program is one of them, but but we know that there are women in these small-town detention centers that are at risk right now.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being here. We're going to continue this discussion and bring up Rick Biddy. Thanks for staying for the whole time. I appreciate that.
No problem, Mark.
Director of Communications from the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services, Delegate Mary Washington from the 4th Ward District, who sponsored the bill that would have prohibited physical restraint from being used on inmates when they're in the second and third trimester and when they're in labor to catch up to a few of the stakes in the nation. Thank you, Mary Washington, for joining us today and bringing the bill up. And Jackie Robarge, Director and Founder of Power Inside, the work you do there. Good to have you with us. And Sue Esty, Director of Legislative and Political Affairs. I'm glad you came in and clarified some stuff. It was important to have you clarify
you.
Those things.
Thank
good,
you for
good to
us.
See you again as well. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we return, we're going to be joined by Pardis Cabrera, who is one of the attorneys representing Guantanamo inmates, to talk about the hunger strike there and what's not being talked about a great deal. So stay with us. We'll be right back.